definitely younger.
Oh, I just did that.
I've seen you play.
And I just.
We're going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Education. Today is April 30th, 2015. We have about four public hearings, and I know that there were a number of House members that wanted to come and have a conversation about this, but they're apparently still on the floor or doing other things, which will make it impossible for them to be here, so we'll have them get some written testimony to us on these bills. So, with that, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2408A, and we'll have a short explanation.
Chair Rublin, members of the committee, House Bill 2408A changes the name of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no subsequent referral. There are no amendments at this time. The bill has no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
So let's call up Ben Cannon, Jim Middleton, and John Wyckoff. He wants to come on up now, too. John, did you want to? Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ben Cannon, Executive Director for Oregon's Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Happy to help present House Bill 248 with my colleagues from CCWD and the Oregon Community College Association. This is a pretty simple and straightforward bill, but it has an important history and background that I want to share with you in brief. As you know, post-secondary education in Oregon is undergoing a pretty significant reorganization at the state level, and a portion of that has been really the consolidation of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development within the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, with its responsibilities also for our public universities and for our private higher ed sector and our state access and financial aid work. Because of that ongoing reorganization last year in 2014, the legislature passed House Bill 4018 that created a task force to figure out how to put CCWD and the HEC together. Task force members included me, Senator Haas, Representative Holvey, Community College Presidents Deborah Durr and Connie Green, Ed Dodson, a member of the Chemeketa Community College Board, chaired the commission, and a HEC commissioner, Betty Duvall, participated as well. Today is, in some respects, the best of days and the worst of days to hear this bill. The best of days, the community colleges are in Salem, in the Capitol today, with many of their presidents and students. It is in order to honor some outstanding community college students who hopefully you've had the opportunity to learn a little bit about today. It is, however, also the worst of days because they have a meeting with the governor right now. So we have John here, and he can speak to their participation in the task force and the recommendations that came out of it. Connie Green, the president of Tillamook Bay Community College, has submitted testimony in support of House Bill 2408 that you should also have. The bill itself essentially combines the two agencies by replacing references to the Department of Community College with the Office of Community College. That makes it consistent with other offices of the HEC, including OSAC, the Office of Student Access and Completion, and our Office of Public University Support and Coordination. It retains the role for a commissioner, although it renames that a director, again, to create consistency within the agency structure. It retains CCWD's responsibility for workforce programs as an integral part of the office. It specifies that they'll continue to adopt rules for an integrated workforce system and to consult with the commission on the implementation of the National Career Readiness Program. So it's essentially as simple as some renaming, a department, an office, a commissioner, a director. And while that seems and is, in fact, quite straightforward, the work that we did on the task force over several months of meetings really helped us at the HEC, our staff, myself, our commission, come to understand what community colleges expect and need from the state of Oregon and a state agency, regardless of the structure, the kind of support and partnership and collaboration that they are looking for from the state. We've committed to working on a set of and adopting a set of sort of shared principles with the colleges that express that relationship, and OCCA and the colleges have presented a recommendation for those that seem to match well the commission's interest in providing support and coordination for community colleges. So, in short, the bill was designed to clearly delineate our responsibility as a Higher Education Coordinating Commission with an Office of Department or Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. It was achieved through a strong collaborative process. We feel good about the results, and happy to answer any questions, but want to give our interim commissioner and our OCCA friends opportunities to weigh in as well.
We'll start over with our
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Canope, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Middleton. I'm the interim commissioner for Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Pleased to be here and voice support for 2408A. A sentence that often you don't hear is that I believe the process that led to this was collaborative, iterative, and balanced. And I'm proud of those three words. The community colleges and CCWD were well represented in the process of developing the bill, with myself being involved as interim commissioner, the deputy commissioner, Krissa Caldwell, who also provided very important historical perspective. Connie Green, who's currently president at Tillamook Bay Community College, gave a campus president perspective, but she has also been an employee with CCWD and has that perspective. Ed Dodson, who is a trustee and a local college perspective, also participating. And again, we also, of course, work closely with Andrea Henderson of the Oregon Community College Association. I believe that the bill before you supports HEC's responsibility to fulfill its coordination role. At the same time, it integrates CCWD into that organization and operation. It maintains CCWD identity within that structure. It recognizes, very importantly, the local role and authority of local boards. And it affirms a continuing CCWD role working with workforce as part of its mainstream community college role. And I, too, stand ready to answer other questions that you would have.
Thank you.
John? Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff with the Oregon Community College Association. And first, just let, I would like to start by thanking Executive Director Cannon and Director Middleton for their work on this. It was a good process. It was a good collaborative process where I think everybody involved learned a little bit about sort of the focus of community colleges and the interaction with the HEC. And I think it's important to remember, and I think this is one of the things that maybe Ben found throughout the process, is that the presidents and our board members felt a sense of ownership over CCWD that I think you don't always see, that would not probably be analogous, I think, to how the universities used to feel about the chancellor's office, and that that the colleges actually asked for CCWD at some point and said, we need this organization to help to provide services for us and analysis of data and things like that, and that it was really the colleges that asked for CCWD. And so one of the big things throughout this process, one of our major focuses, was ensuring that a lot of those services that CCWD provides were going to continue, that we weren't, in fact, asking for a lot of these things to be sort of devolved back to the campuses in the way that the universities were, that we're different sectors with different missions, and that the structures should reflect that. And I think the work of the committee really got to that point where it really does reflect the different structures and the different missions. And in the letter that you have from Connie Green, you can see some of the sets of principles that moving forward we will continue to work toward. And it was things like maintaining the strong collaborative role that community colleges, for example, have in workforce, in the state's workforce system. And so those were some of the things that we really wanted to make sure that the mission of the community college, that the new structure we were setting up would really reflect the mission of the community colleges. And I think, and our presidents think, that process really did honor that, and look forward to continuing this work as we move forward. Thanks.
Any questions for those witnesses? I guess my question is, I want... For me, for the entire 32 years I was in public education, the group that I always felt was underrepresented at every stage has always been community colleges. At the K-12 board, K-14 board, they didn't get a lot of time, and it was an interesting thing to happen. And then we formed the HEC, and I think community colleges were good about moving to that organization. But again, a lot of the stuff that was happening was affecting the universities more than it was the community colleges. They already had boards. So then you watched what HEC was doing, and again, the focus was getting all that stuff that had to get done, and it was HEC's focus. And so I have been concerned about where community colleges land, because they have a very important place to play in their 40-40-20. They have a really important place to play with our local communities. And I'm hopeful, and I guess what I'm asking is this a step in that direction to make sure that there is this ongoing conversation about the importance and how we use our community college system?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, really astute observations, and I think that yes, inasmuch as this bill maintains within the HEC a very strong and clearly delineated office focused on serving community college and workforce issues, it helps to ensure that the commission, in its larger work, maintains a real focus and priority around community college issues. I think you analyzed it just exactly right in the initial transition, which was a transition both for colleges and universities, but for the universities, it's a really, really, really big transition. For the colleges, it was more of a slide from one board to the other. And as a result, and I think not surprisingly, a lot of the initial focus at a staff level and to some extent at a commission level for the HEC has been on that sort of the new state relationship with universities. And to be honest, we're still working on that, right? But what I think has become increasingly clear to this Higher Education Coordinating Commission over almost 2 years is the centrality of colleges in 40-40-20 at each and every one of those levels, right? High school completion, the middle 40, obviously, and that first 40 of bachelor's degrees and higher that community colleges play a huge part in helping to deliver. So I think that moving forward, this bill will help ensure the commission's continued real focus on community college issues.
Yes, Senator Roblin, Vice Chair Knope, Committee. As I, about 6 weeks from now, ride into the sunset in my interim role, I've been pleased with both how the HEC board and the other HEC staff members have thought of the community colleges, our mission, and what we do for the state as a whole, as part of that integrated mission, rather than feeling I have to keep stomping my feet to get any attention. But I think that is always a long-term issue. Community, I've worked in states where there have been all three structures, this one where it was the community college with K-12. I've worked in a state where we have a separate board, and now is working in an environment where we have it with the universities. There are challenges for the community colleges in all three of those. And I think it's as much a matter of good faith, respect, and collaboration as it is structure, and I believe that is in place at this time, but always needs that attention. I've been pleased with the support that I've gotten from Ben as an individual. I think the time that he has put in with the presidents and others, there are issues to deal with, and I think they're up front and being respectfully dealt with.
Thank you.
Anything to add? Just very quickly, I think, or Senator Roblin, I think from our perspective, your analysis was exactly correct, that at the beginning, the HEC by necessity had logistical and structural issues to deal with at the university that had to be sort of removed from the table first. But I think the process for 2408 or leading to 2408 really helped provide the focus to sort of pivot back to to the issues with community colleges and really bring that focus back. So we understood but had concerns just that out of necessity it would create sort of a culture that was really more university focused. But I think that they've really tried to pivot and elevate the community colleges issues, community college issues, and overall we feel good about the process and where it's come.
Thank you. Any other thoughts? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chair, and I agree. I think this becomes even more important if we get to something slightly more realistic like 2060-20.
Other comments? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we had one other person who I could have brought up with this group. Dana, do you want to say anything, or were you there just as a...
Of course she's going to say something.
I know. We have to have Dana come. We thought you could put it all in perspective, Dana. Yeah. Bring it all together.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Knope, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. And I will just mention that we will have an amendment to the bill. There are some capital construction subaccounts that are in CCWD that we need to transfer to the HEC. So I just wanted you to know that.
I appreciate knowing that, actually. No,
this is not really putting a bow on it,
right.
But you should know.
That's good. Yeah, no, that's been an issue, as you know, with AD and all the other things we're doing and trying to get all these things and figuring out how the money goes from place to place and who has authority over it and all that kind of stuff. So
we should have them for soon. They will be technical amendments.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we're fairly comfortable with the treasurer's office, this office, that office. Everybody agrees?
Well, we've got it. We're starting.
Okay. Thank
when
you.
When we bring you something, that we will make sure that's the
okay.
case. Yeah. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Yes. Senator Hass.
Just a comment. It's just really interesting. I was on this task force, but to see these people who were born with, who were part of the birthing process, including Dana and Ben of Senate Bill 270 and this evolution. And it really does, you know, we're eventually starting to see the streamlining effect, and it just, it's a more efficient and more, I hope, effective process, and I'm not quite as cynical as 20. I think we still have a good goal that is very achievable for the state.
May I comment, Mr. Chair?
Please.
I will have to tell the committee, particularly you, Senator Hass, that I do hear occasionally that it's working. That the universities, and I think if
I
you
agree.
Were heard about the road shows at the Ways and Means did, you see universities and colleges supporting each other and collaborating in ways that folks I have heard didn't experience in the past.
Yeah. And it was, Mr. Chair, 270. It was 242,
right.
242,
oh, right.
And then 270.
Yep. Yep.
Numbers. I think we should. Those built. There should be rafters in this building,
and
there would be a couple of them up there.
Big,
should retire
thick.
Those numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this before or after the retrofit?
Any other questions, concerns?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the audience who was holding back and now needs to speak? I see somebody moving, but I guess not coming this way. So staying out of the camera. That was very good. Okay. With that, we will close our public hearing on House Bill 2408A. We'll open a public hearing on 2410A, and we'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2410A allows community colleges to award training certificates for non-credit courses and programs. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support of those present. The bill has no prior subsequent referral. We are considering the -3 amendments at this time. The bill has no fiscal impact and no revenue.
And we can start with Dana Richardson. Come on up. Do you want Kathy? And Ross? Okay. Kathy.
Solis.
Yeah. How do you say your last name, Kathy?
Clace.
Okay, it's just exactly. I just hadn't seen those letters put together.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Knope, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I am here just to briefly introduce the concept in House Bill 2410 and then let the experts kind of take it from there. So it's a pretty straightforward bill. It would allow community colleges to offer non-credit training certificates. Currently, universities can do that, but community colleges can't. So this bill would address that difference. These folks are the co-chairs of a work group that came together on this concept. They worked on it for at least 12 months, probably a little bit longer. And they probably won't mention this, but I want you to know that they received an award from the Learning Resources Network for the process that they used in reaching out to people and pulling this together. So they probably weren't going to toot their own horn, but they've gotten some national recognition for the work that they put into it. So I'll turn it over to them to describe, and then Mr. Chair, John Wyckoff and I could speak to the amendments a little bit if that's helpful.
Okay, that'd be great. Yep.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Canoe, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ross Tomlin, Southwestern Oregon Community College, Vice President of Instruction and Student Services. With me today is Kathy Cleese, Director of Allied Health in the Continuing Ed Department at Lane Community College, and the President-elect of the Oregon Association of Community and Continuing Education. In the spring of 2013, the Oregon Association of Community and Continuing Education membership met for their annual meeting. This association's membership represents the non-credit divisions of the Oregon Community Colleges and Community Educators. At that time, they joined together to form a work group representing 10 of the 17 community colleges and a representative from the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to explore a change of the Oregon administrative rule to allow non-credit divisions to award training certificates. We called ourselves the OAR Work Group and worked throughout the summer and into the fall 2013 on the definition, rigor, and approval criteria for the non-credit training certificates. The work group studied what other states allowed for non-credit training certificates by conducting a survey with the support of the National Council for Continuing Education and Training. We looked at the benchmarks and guidance from the Learning Resource Network and reviewed the criteria in Oregon administrative rules regarding occupational preparatory and occupational supplementary non-credit course approval. Employers need change quickly, and most often they turn to community colleges for the very trainings they require their employees to have. The non-credit divisions of community colleges can quickly meet the training needs of industry in their local communities. Non-credit training certificates will give current and future employees the documentation required to show proof of skill attainment needed for entry-level skills in a variety of industries. The work group was just completing their white paper in January 2014 when we were informed that the Department of Justice had reviewed the current law and determined a law change, not a rule change, would be needed for the non-credit divisions to give a certificate. The work group then actively worked throughout the spring and summer of 2014, meeting with stakeholder groups to educate them on our efforts, and we also spoke to leaders from other community colleges throughout the U.S. and employers to get additional input. Currently, non-credit divisions are required to conduct an adverse impact review for any current occupational preparatory classes and have to go through that state approval process. This state approval requirement will remain in place if the opportunity to offer non-credit certificates to students is allowed legislatively. In an informal survey conducted by the Oregon Association of Community and Continuing Education, the non-credit divisions in Oregon's community colleges are not planning on developing any new non-credit training certificate courses, but would like to be able to move forward and award a certificate instead of a recognition award or award of completion. The current wording is not understood by business and industry as to denote any significant skill attainment. For business and industry, the term recognition award does not have the same meaning as the term certificate. Students may complete a short-term training to obtain an advanced skill set or to meet requirements for an industry-recognized credential, and then utilize the experience as credit for prior learning toward a degree or certificate. A non-credit training certificate will help students reach their educational goals in both short-term and long-term scenarios.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and Vice Chair Cadope and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Calais. I am the Director of Allied Health in Continuing Education at Lane Community College and the President-elect of the Oregon Association of Community and Continuing Education. For an example of how these non-credit training certificates could be implemented, at Lane Community College, we offer a medical receptionist class, which is a 60-hour class which teaches entry-level skills to work the front desk of a medical office. This is offered through the non-credit side of the house. A student successfully completing this class may use these hours towards a medical office assistant two-year associate's degree and MOA certification. They will be gaining valuable work experience while completing their associate's degree by working the front desk of a medical office. Or the student may decide to complete the non-credit phlebotomy class, which will give them stackable credentials with two non-credit training certificates. Further, these certificates would not only help our students become more marketable as they look for new jobs or move up in their career fields, but it would also help to meet the middle 40 of the 40-40-20 goal of having 40% earn an associate's degree or post-secondary certificate and degree. Thank you for your time and consideration, and we'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions for this group? I guess you answered one of the questions I was going to ask, which was you see these certificates as having met that middle 40 requirement of a continuing certificate. Okay. And today we had a little bit on the floor about flaggers and how this kind of stuff goes. And so that's another area I think that can also be a community college thing, getting people prepared to be an appropriate flagger. It's those kinds of things that pop up where there is some training that's necessary, but not an associate's degree type of training that you meet the need for. Is that what I'm hearing?
So, Chair Roblin, can I just say that I do, the continuing education department at Lane does offer the flagger classes, and that would be something that could definitely be a certificate program, although they do get a certificate to do that. But, okay. Yes.
Any other? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And you can stay, Dana, and we'll bring up Mr. Wyckoff. And also, Joel, do you want to come up on this one? Thanks.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff, Oregon Community College Association, here to speak in support of House Bill 2410. I'm just going to be very brief because I think it was covered very well and thoroughly, and would like to thank everybody who worked on this. We see this as a very student-centered bill that really just allows the students to take the skills that they have learned and get recognition from business and industry for the skills that they actually have. And so in that way, we just see this as a very student-focused initiative. The Dash 3 amendments that you have, that's a change from an amendment we made in the House side because we think it better reflects what we were really trying to get at, which was ensuring that the process that the colleges would currently be taking continued, which is they make sure there is in fact a local market demand for further education or to have more capacity in an area so that we aren't simply sort of cannibalizing existing educational resources that might happen in a community, so that we're continuing to show that there won't be detrimental duplication. And that and the piece that was really missing in the other in what we had done on the House side was connecting it to local market demand, labor market demand. And that's what that amendment is really intended to do, is just sort of refine that to get, I think, better at what we were trying to get to.
Okay. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Joel Fisher. On behalf of the Oregon Business Association, we're a statewide association with over 275 members across Oregon, big and small, here to tell you a couple of things that you probably already know. As you recall, we spent the whole summer last summer going around talking with local business leaders, and one of the things that we continually saw was the community colleges and just how much that word community, you know, really reflects through connecting everybody in these local communities and being a means where we can start to achieve what people are calling the new normal, and community colleges really are that place where we have that flexibility to allow students and business to get together to connect education to careers. This bill helps us, we think it's not just student-centered, but also is really good for business and helping train folks. Workforce was the number one issue that came out of this exercise we did this summer, and we urge your support.
Questions? I guess mine goes to the amendment that you're talking about, the third. So does that amend the portion that talks about prior to offering a new non-credit course or training certificate, you have to go through this process that was developed a few years ago?
Chair Roblin, yeah, that's correct. It that process is outlined in rule, and so it refers to the rule and says, essentially, keep doing that, and then it includes the piece about also looking at labor market demand.
Okay. We look forward to having a conversation about the amendment. So, thank you very much. Again, I'd like to offer anybody who came to sit and watch and then got stirred to have a conversation about this bill could stand up now and come forward. I see no one, so we will close our public hearing on House Bill 2410. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2525. With that, a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2525A directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to develop standards related to the transferability of credits for community colleges and public universities. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral. We're not considering amendments at this time. The fiscal impact has been issued, and the bill has no revenue impact.
So continuing the trend of the Dana Richardson day at the in Senate Education, we might as well have John Wyckoff, since he's kind of in second place. And a new person, Mario, are you here? So come on up.
We just do what Dana tells us.
Wise choice.
Good motto to live by.
Yeah, that's a really good motto to live by.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Canote, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I brought my friends with me for a very intentional reason. I'm here to speak to House Bill 2525A, which is all about improving transferability of credits between within the post-secondary sector. You all, the legislature in 2011, adopted a statute. It's called the Transfer Student Bill of Rights. And since that time, you know, there are a lot of different courses of study and majors have been added. And with Rep. Witt's leadership, we thought this would be a good time to kind of look at that and update that statute. And that's what House Bill 2525A would do. As I mentioned with Representative Witt, we pulled together, the HEC pulled together, I'll not do alphabet soup, although you guys know all of it, community colleges and workforce development folks, Oregon Community Colleges Association folks, Oregon Education Investment Board people, the Oregon Students Association, and the public universities to do three things in this bill. As I mentioned, we want to build on existing efforts that are in the Transfer Student Bill of Rights, but expand upon them. So in Section 1.3, we're specifying the importance of aligning requirements for similar courses and then finding the majors that will take more than 2 years to complete following transfer. Of course, the goal is that you complete in 2 years, but we need to look at those that take more time and why. The other thing that we need to do right now, we were building a system that made it easy or at least accessible for students to go in and say, I'm taking this course, I want to go here, what's going to happen with my credit? It was called Atlas, but the funding wasn't sustained, and that project essentially was never completed. So at this point, we need to go back and figure out what's available. If a student wants to take it upon themselves to figure it out, you know, what do they have accessible, what isn't accessible, what do we need to do to make it accessible? So this bill would have us look at doing that. And then the third part is to do a research plan to analyze when and why credits are lost. I think a lot of times you all will hear from constituents, we hear from students who have an issue, but you know, without having a sense of what's being lost and when and why, you're trying to come at a problem without really understanding where it's coming from. So this bill, again, would direct the HEC to pull together folks to do that. And I'm happy to answer any questions and put my friends on the hook.
Chair Rowland, members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff, Oregon Community College Association. And I would like to thank Representative Witt and Dana Richardson from the HEC and other folks who really helped put this together. We have traditionally had sort of two major transfer options for students, the Oregon Transfer Module and then the Associate of Arts Oregon Transfer Degree. And you will sometimes hear from constituents that as they transfer, some of their courses don't transfer, like Dan just talked about. And there are sort of two reasons that can happen. And one is, I mean, we will find sometimes, I think, much more isolated cases where someone may take a call or a university may take the Oregon Transfer Module or the AAOT and do what they sort of call unpacking it, where you don't include all of the credits moving forward. But that generally doesn't occur because the universities have been pretty good about accepting all of the credits in the module or degree because that's sort of the agreements that are worked out. Where it becomes an issue, though, is if you're transferring, say, into, I'm just going to use as an example, say, mechanical engineering at OSU, there will be specific degree requirements that may not transfer into your degree. So while all your credits transfer, they don't transfer into your degree. And that's really part of the trick is trying to get the information for students and make sure they understand that, yes, that may transfer to the university, but it may not transfer into your degree area. And that's something that it's harder to just sort of have a one-size-fits-all that will transfer into every of these very specific major areas that each university has different focuses. You know, an engineering degree at OSU that might have the same title at PSU may have different focus and different requirements in some areas. And so that's, I think, a big part of what this tries to get at. And with that, I think I can close. And again, just would like to thank the HEC and Representative Witt for them working with us and for their work on this.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Canope, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mario Parker Milligan. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. We have community college members and university members, and for those of you who haven't heard from constituents about this issue, I can send a lot your way. We think this is, we've been supportive of the transfer student Bill of Rights since its inception, and thank Representative Witt and Dana and the rest of the work group who spent a lot of time over the last month or so working this bill out. We think it's a good step forward in ensuring that students aren't losing credits when they transfer over to a four-year institution.
Questions for this group? Yes. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a comment than a question. And John, excuse me, but I thought that was a little softer answer on the transferability than I'm really comfortable with. The whole reason we created that, or one of the main reasons we created the HEC, is to make sure that these things transfer. And particularly as Senator Haas has been working on trying to get more students able financially to go into community colleges for that thing, I think it's important that we do that. And I really see very few reasons why a 100 or 200 series class should not transfer straight across and meet the requirement for a program that has a similar requirement within a university for a 100 or 200 class. You can make stronger arguments for the 300 and 400s, but I think Senator Dembrow often argues that we ought to have a common numbering system, and he's probably right. So I hope this task force or work group takes this one on.
Chair Roblin, Senator Beyer, I would agree with everything you just said. And I want to be clear, we always want those credits to transfer for our students to the greatest degree possible, and would prefer all of them to. And again, I think it gets into some of the more science and engineering related fields where they have some sort of specific requirements, but the universities set those requirements for their degree areas, and I think what this aims to do is make sure that we're aligning on our end to the greatest degree possible. But I agree with your statement.
Mr. Chair, may I comment?
Please.
I provided the committee as well a summary of work that's been done on this since 1987. I know oftentimes legislatively there feels like a bit of fatigue, as though we shouldn't have to revisit the issue. And I think if you do take a look at that, it came out of the Common Course numbering work that was done over the last couple of years. I think you will see that over time there are improvements, but it's something that we have to continue to work at and maintain.
Actually, if I may just add to on the and the work that came out of that work group was really focused more and looked at, really pointed to alignment as being the issue, because one of the issues with course numbering is you go through the time and the expense of course numbering, and then a university may say, well, yeah, you can call that writing 121, but we're not accepting it. And so the course numbering doesn't really guarantee the student anything one way or the other. And students anymore, right, it's not the student that sits down and lines up a number to a number. An academic advisor does that. And so the numbering becomes a bit of a somewhat of a red herring, because a student can have all the same course numbers, and that doesn't necessarily mean they have to have them be accepted. And that's the work that really needs to be done to make sure that there's alignment so that they are accepted.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up, yes.
And that's why we have a HEC.
Right, that's right. That's absolutely right.
No, same idea. I'm going to follow up a little bit on that. You have worked hard at getting transfers, degrees, so the associate degree transfers, and the credits that were there kind of transfer. The question I'm hearing you say is that many of the courses that were inside that degree, they may transfer as a credit, but that credit may not meet the requirement for the individual degree that you're doing at the university. Is that what I'm hearing? So at the end of the day, they may have a whole lot more credits than they thought they needed, but they got all the credits. And then there's the module, the transfer module. That's gotten closer, correct? I mean, they're pretty much transferring as a block.
Yep.
If you take this math class and this English class and this one, it'll transfer to any of the other universities as this English class, this math class, and so on. Is that true? Okay, because that's been a real positive improvement from my perspective. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, having gone to a community college and then in Washington and then gone to the university, I came to the same conclusion. There were two calculuses at the University of Washington. those who are going in engineering and those who want a calculus for everybody else. And so if you didn't take the engineering calculus and you were an engineer, you were taking it over. And having looked at both, they are totally different classes. I mean, if you're in that engineering track, it's a different kind of math that you're getting. I was theoretical mathematics. I liked the other kind of math. It wasn't about getting the problem, but they were definitely different. And it was fairly clear when I got to the University of Washington that the classes I had taken were not set to be the aeronautical engineer or the other, and that if I had really wanted to go that, I probably should have gone directly to the university because their requirements were different from everybody else's. So, and is that something you're trying to identify so that students know ahead of time? Because that would have been nice for me
to know.
But you're not necessarily telling the one that you can't do that because I don't think everybody should take engineering calculus. It's a different course than the other calculus course. But not knowing is a real problem for kids.
Mr. Chair, I think that's what this bill is trying to get
that's
at.
That's absolutely right.
Okay.
And I can hear Ms. Kresge behind me, and I can bring a university friend up if you want.
And but these core classes that are just about everybody, I mean, you know, writing 121, some of these other courses, that you may have a different book, but it's the same skill set that they're trying to teach you. And I can't understand why any of those wouldn't transfer to the major or whatever.
And Chair Roblin, generally that's not the issue. It is what you described before on the sort of the math and science courses that you described them better as you. Sounds like you've taken many more of them than I did. I avoided them.
They are very different classes. And I will tell you, when you get into some of the advanced math, in the theoretical part, my engineers would say, what are you wasting your time on that part? That's not math. And it's kind of like, wow. So I understand the needs for those kinds of things. So I appreciate that this is trying to get at that and better inform students what they need to do. So. And that if they have taken the regular calculus class at the community college and then they decide to be an engineer, I will tell you that they will be thankful that they took the engineering calculus because they are not going to have as much fun in the later engineering classes if they hadn't had that direct training. So, anyway, thank you very much. We have Jeff Dentz. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this that is ready to jump out of their seats? I see no one else right now, so Jeff, you get to be the wrap up this one.
Senator Roblin, Vice Chair Canope, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Dentz, President of the Interinstitutional Faculty Senate. We represent the faculty of Oregon's public universities. IFS greatly appreciates the focus the sponsors of House Bill 2525A have placed on the important issue of transferability of credits between community colleges and universities. In order for the state to achieve its ambitious 40-40-20 goal, students and parents need to be provided a clear and transparent picture by which they can navigate the pathway of higher education. House Bill 2525A is a step in the right direction. However, certain aspects of the current language of the bill may prove problematic in its implementation. Specifying the parameters of what constitutes a sufficiently similar course offering can be readily achieved by the development of a common course numbering system for lower division courses where students are provided clear information on what is recognized as a course equivalency. This goal can be achieved by the -2 amendments to House Bill 2525A, with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission utilizing its convening authority to bring together faculty, grouped by academic discipline, to align course numbering and, moreover, learning outcomes of sufficiently similar courses offered by Oregon's community colleges and universities. Building on the success of a similar initiative by mathematics faculty, development of common course numbering generated by a dialogue between community college and university faculty working in partnership holds significant promise in addressing the sufficiently similar provisions of House Bill 2525A. From our perspective, the real key to capturing the essence of House Bill 2525A legislative intent is rooted in Section 2C. That is, the HEC convened work group should determine, quote, how to implement best practices for providing students with information and making students aware of the information available. Fortunately, there are many existing best practices the state can emulate to provide this important information and, moreover, transparency to students and parents intent on transferring from community colleges to public universities. The creation of a statewide web portal where students can ascertain which courses transfer from community colleges to universities has significant potential enabling enabling the seamless and efficient completion of degrees. IFS suggests New Jersey's NY Transfer web portal is a best practice Oregon should emulate in order to fully implement the legislative intent of House Bill 2525-8. NY Transfer provides a range of essential information for educational consumers. A statewide web portal created to serve the information needs of transfer students holds significant promise in helping Oregon attain its 40-40-20 goals and, moreover, protects the best interest of our most valuable resource, our students. Thank you for your time, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Jeff. Again, any last people that would like to jump up and speak? I see none. We're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2525A, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2681A. With that, we'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2681A directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission and State Board of Education to oversee a work group to examine and recommend effective processes and strategies for placing students in courses at community colleges. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time. A fiscal impact has been issued, and the bill has no revenue impact.
And with that, I think we should call up some people who we may have seen before. Dana Richardson and John Wyckoff. As you can tell, we organize these by community college, so it's pretty obvious.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Knoop, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I'm pleased to be here today to speak to you about House Bill 2681A. The work group that got together to talk about Representative Witt's bill, House Bill 2525A, but also worked with Representative Comp on House Bill 2681A. So it's the same folks, and we are bringing you this bill that will build upon part of what we wanted to do with this bill is build upon existing efforts. There's a statute that requires the State Board of Education and the HEC to convene, and we wanted to include this in the sorts of things that they would get together and talk about. And what that this is around placement tests for students who are graduating from high school and what courses they're placed in community colleges. So the bill would direct the State Board of Ed and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to jointly oversee a work group that will recommend strategies to effectively and appropriately place students, incoming high school graduates, in community college courses. The bill includes that there will be consideration to using the Smarter Balance Assessment to do that. Wouldn't have to be the only thing, but it's something that we're required to look at. You may have heard recently that the 7 universities and all 17 community colleges have signed alignment agreements. They're going to pilot over the next years, working through some implementation and technical issues. They'll pilot using the Smarter Balanced Assessment for students coming out of high school. If you score a 3 or higher and you take substantive courses your senior year, that you could have an exemption from taking the placement test if you enroll in community college. So that's work that you should be aware of that's going on as well. We are kind of building on existing work, but we're also plowing new ground. There's never been a work group of community colleges, public universities, student and high school educators that formally convened to figure this out in the past. So again, I think some of the ideas behind the HEC, they're working, they're coming together, and this bill's another example of the us having a chance to work on that with you and our partners. So the work group would report back by next February for a short session with a preliminary report and then come back with something more complete the following September. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, John Wyckoff, Oregon Community College Association, here to speak in support of House Bill 2525A. And just wanted to make a couple of quick points. For the universities, right, this isn't so much of an issue because they have admission standards, so you have to meet a certain academic standard to get into a university. It is in our mission. We take all comers, and we use placement tests to find out where to appropriately place students in their academic career. But one of the things that we know is that if you incorrectly place somebody too low, and remedial math, I think, is the perfect example, because students who are placed in remedial math, that's just something that isn't done nationwide, isn't done particularly well. The the outcomes on remedial math on completion are not particularly good, but they're especially not good for students who get placed in remedial math that is below their level. You're better off to put somebody in a class that's a little bit beyond their level than you are to put them in a class that's below their level, because it's sort of dispiriting if you don't you aren't getting college credit if you're at a remedial level. I mean, there are just a lot of reasons that it is far worse for a student's academic progress to put them in a course that's too low, and we know that. But we wanted to make sure there was also some flexibility, because we do have issues where, for example, if you're a returning adult student who hasn't been in the academic setting for a long time, a nationally recognized standardized test may not be, for example, in an area like writing, won't probably do a particularly good job of assessing you, especially if you've been out of the academic setting for a long time. Returning adult students often don't test as well on standardized tests, but if they have the ability to sit down and write an essay, and so you can look at their ability to kind of follow a thought through an entire essay, you can get a better chance of estimate of what their skills are and what their abilities are. And so we just wanted to make sure that there would be a way to look at alternate assessments than just some of the nationalized tests, but that we know this is an issue and that this is something that we need to make sure that we're as accurately as possible placing students in courses that are appropriate to their skill level.
Questions? I guess I'll say a couple things because you brought it up. I have a really good student who I think graduated eventually with honors in an engineering program at Oregon State. But when he came home one summer, he decided to go to the community college and take one of his calculus classes, took the pretest, and they said you shouldn't do it, and which he got an A in the next class when he was at Oregon State because it was on his grill. But he didn't take it that summer because the test said he wasn't ready, and he was never a great test taker, but he was always a good student. So it would be nice to have. There's also been, I believe, a number of studies that say if you give them a short course, a remedial kind of thing, just to see where they're at and push them through, especially in math, that's a better thing than a test that puts them in a course for a whole semester and turns them off. So I hope we can do some other things besides just placement tests. I mean, as you go through this, I understand the need for placement tests, but I think that sometimes short course things that aren't even courses come in the week before and have an opportunity to review material you've forgotten since you would be a better solution sometimes. And I would hope as we continue the continuation of making this a seamless system that we start thinking about going back to teacher recommendations, especially if they're going directly from high school into the next level. That maybe a note from a teacher that says, this is a really hard worker, he does know the material, never tested well, but we think they're ready. If we start getting some of those conversations happening, the system, I think, can work better and make people feel that they're a part of it, including high school people that start to talk more, which has been happening with our community colleges and our universities. The conversations have been much better over the last few years, and maybe we can work some other ways to have that seamlessness happen. So I really appreciate the bill, though, because I will tell you, when we tried to figure out a course to give our juniors or a little test, we went out and surveyed the community colleges, and we found out there was more than a few. And so we just picked the one that was closest to us, because what we found is if we give this short test to kids in their junior year, it made them more likely to take that senior level math class that they weren't thinking of taking, or that other English class, with a little bit more impetus, because they knew they wanted to go there. And we had explained to them, you can go there and pay for what you get in high school, or you can go there and pay for what you should get in college. You make the decision. And a lot of kids made the right decision, but they needed to have some. We need to have something to back up what we're saying, and those placement tests were really helpful and fairly inexpensive, actually. Any other questions? I thank you both for being here. There's no one else on the list, but again, since there's been this active crowd in the audience, if there's anyone there that would like to participate and come up and testify, they are certainly welcome. I see none. We will close our public hearing on 2681A. That kind of finishes up the work. Is there anything for the good of the order from any of our members? I see nothing. We're going to adjourn our Senate Education Committee for today. Thank you all for being here. Home by dinner tonight. Thank you all for being here. Home by dinner tonight.